Hello and a very warm welcome back to Height Club from me, Height. A little note to say, this episode was recorded quite a few months back over Zoom and therefore the audio quality isn't great and there are a few little issues with it, but I hope I've done my best to give you an episode that you'll really enjoy. I really love recording this one. Hope you enjoy. Height Club. He's a DJ, producer and writer from Hamburg, Germany, whose songs and remixes have taken him far beyond the German borders to success all over the world. His remix of Omi's Cheerleader was a worldwide number one smash, going several times platinum in virtually every country it was released. We talk about how that record was just the beginning of a very impressive career to date. Welcome to Height Club, Felix Yeun. How are you?
Sounds great. And now I made it to Height Club.
You made it to Height Club, man. You are, I think, the seventh guest we've interviewed. Seven was voted the world's favorite number. Did you know that?
I did not know that. Five is actually my personal favorite number. So if you can just pretend I was fifth, I would love that.
So how's lockdown been for you?
It's been really good, to be honest. I've enjoyed being home. I've enjoyed not living out of a bag, like actually living at home, spending time in the studio, in my garden. I'm struggling to even take one day off a week. It's crazy. There's so much stuff to do. Like, I'm doing all these like DJ live streams and I'm finishing up music. I have press days. I have like planning for the next like live shows and stuff. I'm actually starting to tour again. I have a first show in 10 days. I'm going to perform for 200 cars.
It's like those old 50s cinema drive-in things. You know, you see them filmed. Yeah. We're going to rewind a little bit, as the DJs say. We're going to take it back a little bit to how you kind of started. So yeah, just tell us how you ended up. How you ended up in London, first of all, and why.
I came for you, man. Like, I was in London before 2012 to go to Point Blank College. After finishing high school in Germany, I wanted to like dive into music properly and learn production and like play shows. I managed to get some gigs at Ministry of Sound and Pasha, like opening on the second floor and stuff like that. So that was pretty cool when I was like 18. That was before I even put out music on SoundCloud. And then I moved back to Germany and I just kept doing my thing. And I started like to sign deals with Indies and then later Universal. And then my team and I, mainly Daniel, my manager, you know him, we were talking like, okay, what do we do now? What's the next level? And I was like, well, I need a team. I need people to work with. I want to like collaborate, move it to the next level. And he somehow knew you. I don't even know what the connection is. Maybe he knew your manager, or I don't know. Did you work with Daniel before, or how did he know about you?
You're not supposed to be interviewing me. I'm supposed to be interviewing you.
This is a conversation, man. I'm getting to know something too.
I think what happened is, do you know what? I think I met him in 2011 in Germany. I did a writing in Berlin. So I turned up and I think Daniel was managing someone I was writing with, or I think at the time. So I think I met him, but I don't remember meeting him. It was one of those ones where we definitely met, but I don't remember meeting him.
Okay, well, anyway, he remembered you, that's for sure. And then he was like, well, I know this guy. He lives in London. Why don't you go work with him? And then I think the session with you was actually my first co-write ever. And we made the beat for I Do that ended up being like my second release on Universal ever. There, yeah, that's how we met. And that's why I was in London, to work with you.
Had a little studio in a converted nuclear bomb shelter.
I don't remember the nuclear bomb shelter, but
listen, if the nuclear bomb went off, I mean, that would be the first thing to disappear.
And man, you took me to a Pizza Express, I believe. That was mind-blowing for me. You were like, this is the best pizza, and I actually really loved it. They do like a low-calorie, low-carb pizza, and then they just cut out the middle. And it's like, you just get less. You just get less. It's not any more healthy. You just get less.
It's like a donut, you know, that's got a hole in it. So, I mean, you know, think how many calories you're saving when you're eating donuts. So how did you know you wanted to do music? Like, what made you do it?
I started through DJing, really. Well, I played the violin as a kid. I guess that's like my first connection to music. I played for like 7 years when I was 6 years old. In first grade, I started. Then later, when I was like 15 and we started throwing like birthday parties and stuff, I was always the kid in charge of the music. And then like streaming wasn't really big yet, so it was still downloads. which seems like ages ago now. A lot of my friends didn't really have a music collection. I was the one that was like just bringing the playlists and the music. And that's how it basically started, plugging my phone into the jack and being like, oh, listen to this song. And I got really obsessed with like DJing. Like I would come home after school and just practice transitions like every day. I was doing like DJ routines, 17 tracks in 4 minutes, blah, 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 with like throwing in samples and a cappellas. And that's kind of how it started for me. And then at some point I was like, okay, if I really want to make it as a DJ, I need to have my own tracks. So I started looking into production.
What happened when you said to your mum that, yeah, I've got to go and do this. I want to do this for a living. You're like,
I guess there were different phases. Like in the beginning, they were really supportive. It was just a hobby. I had like a few discussions. Like I played a show the night before my A-level exams at like a student night in a club like 30 minutes away from where I live. And I was like at home at like 4 a.m. or something. And they were like, you have exams the next day. I was like, yeah, I'll be fine. You know, I just got to do this. I was like, this is an opportunity. It's a different promoter. I've never worked with him. If I say no now, I will never get in. And you know what? I think this is actually one of the reasons why I made it in the end, because I took those opportunities and I went anyway. Because who knows, you know, this was like, I think my second club show ever. Maybe I wouldn't have played the third one if I didn't make the second, you know. And then also when I told them I want to move to London and go to a music college, I really had to fight for it. But in the end, they supported me and even paid for me going to London mostly and were super supportive. But then the deal was that after this 1 year, I had to go to university. And I did that for 2 months. I studied business in Berlin. I was like, I'm going to go to Berlin because I have a music scene there and then I'll just pretend to go to uni. But it didn't really work out. I didn't even write the first exams. Like, I quit after 2 months. Everybody was like, you're throwing away all of your education. Like, we took care of you your entire life, blah, blah, blah. And now you're, like, doing nothing. And I was like, I'm going to show them. And then I just worked. It was just a motivation. I just worked even harder, you know. Cool. Luckily, it only took, like, a year before I started making money. And then I was like, look, I'm making money. Like,
you make it sound really easy. As we know, there is more to it than
I already had like my SoundCloud hype going on at that time, and I was just uploading so many bootlegs and stuff like every couple of weeks, and I had an email list with 300 email addresses of all the bloggers, and I would send every track to every blogger with a personalized email. I would go on their blogs, read the reviews they did, and they're like, oh, I saw you wrote an article about this and that track. It sounds similar to my track, so-and-so. So I think you might enjoy it. Please have a listen. And I just started to network with bloggers like that. And through that, I got a couple of Hype Machine number ones, which was super important back then. And that's how like the industry discovered me.
Being in an era where like, you know, you can access and make use of all these kind of technologies and websites and things. And I remember when I first spoke to you, you showed me your SoundCloud and thing. I remember thinking, how did you get all that going? You know, it's like not good enough just to do the work. You know what I mean? Like, and this is important for people to know that like who aren't in music, you know, you've got to put yourself out there and make it happen. You know?
Yeah, you got to be an entrepreneur. Like, it's about building your own brand, you know. I was like obsessed with everything, like the cover artworks, the social media, the sound, everything. And then just like release by release, just start building your brand, because labels are never going to do that for you. They only sign what's already working, you know. You need to already come with a following, with a hype, with a news, with something, because there's so much music out there. Just being a good musician is not enough to become successful.
What was the first release that really made you think when you woke up in the morning, okay, things are starting to happen here? Like when you turn your phone on in the morning, you're like, oh shit, like, okay, this is blowing up. What was the first one for you?
Well, the first one that was really blowing up was quite obviously Cheerleader Remix. That was like on a big, big level. I mean, right before that, I think Ain't Nobody did really well on SoundCloud. I already had that one up on SoundCloud like a year before it got released officially. And it worked really well on SoundCloud. And I also like, for me personally, wait, I'm going to give me 1 second. I need to show you something. This is my first release ever. And it's until today, the only vinyl that I have. Felix Jehn, it's called Sommer am Meer, which is Summer by the Sea in German. This was my first track ever in 2013. We released it on Tondieb Klang, like a German indie label. And to me, it was such a big deal at the time because, you know, it was on Beatport, it was on vinyl, it was everywhere, you know, it was on all the official platforms. So I think for me, this was like the first time where I was like, oh shit, this is cool. But obviously, it didn't really sell much and stuff. It didn't get me any money. Like,
I know virtually no one whose first release was a success, you know. I mean, if you are that person, actually, it's probably harder for you, I'd say, because then you have to follow it up. You're like, how did that happen? I've got to follow it up. I remember you telling me, you said, yeah, I've done this remix, like, and it seems to be going well in Sweden. So, like, I don't know, we'll see how it goes. And that was where we were when we first met. So tell me about that time it came about.
Well, yeah, that time I was, like, about to sign or just signed with Universal Music. And we were, like, kind of preparing for my singles. And then out of nowhere, like, we get a call, like, from a friend of my manager, Daniel, who lives in Sweden. And he was like, oh, congrats, by the way, on the hit and stuff. And we're like, which hit, which song? It's like, the Cheerleader remix. It's playing on the radio, like, all the time. And we didn't even get the info, like, right away because it was a remix for another label and we didn't really work with them. It's something I had done, like, half a year ago. We almost forgot about it, you know? It wasn't even a topic. Like, we didn't even look at the stats of the song. I didn't even know it exists, kind of, you know what I mean? And then suddenly we just get a call and it's like, yeah, it's a hit in Sweden now. And I was like, okay, interesting. I didn't really get it because it wasn't playing on the radio in Germany and I hadn't been to Sweden. So I didn't really understand what it's like to actually have a hit song. I first understood it like in January 2015, I think. I went to Sweden for a little tour. I played like 4 shows in Sweden. And that's when I started to notice, okay, people are actually showing up for me. There's my face on the like on the artwork now. Like when I played the song, everybody like came running to the dance floor. Everybody was singing along and stuff. And I was like, oh, they actually know this song now. Wow. So, yeah, that was cool.
You start to see a taste of kind of international success. Draw me an audio map of how it went, you know, of like from country to country and how, and explain like how this kind of thing works.
It just worked via Spotify, really. It was like one of the first big streaming hits that happened via Spotify. And Sweden is obviously one of the countries that were already advanced. I remember like then already iTunes didn't matter in Sweden. It was all just about streaming numbers. From Sweden, it just started to cross over into different playlists in different countries. And obviously at some point, Sony made it a global priority and started pushing the record. And I just remember that at some point I even stopped following the countries and charts because it was just too much. Like every day was like, oh, by the way, it's number one in Belgium now. And it's now gold in Spain. And it's now number one in Australia. And I was like, yeah, just stop telling me. There's like, you know, it's like it went to number one in 55 countries. I was like, I can't get a call like this every day. I need to focus on what I'm actually doing, you know.
We'll go back to Chile in a second, but how do you manage to sort of make yourself concentrate when there are loads of things going on? You've got loads of noise and people ringing you. Like, what's your strategy?
Just try and avoid people ringing me. there's two things. One is like now that I've really learned over the years is I meditate every day, actually twice in the morning and at night as well. And I just try to stay mindful and just be in the present and do what I'm currently doing instead of worrying about the future or past or whatever. And then I just had to literally lower the input because I can't have people calling me every 10 minutes. How am I going to get anything done, you know? So I started to have like rules like, okay, don't use WhatsApp for business, only email, you know, so I can actually make a decision when I want to read my emails and not have a push notification mixed with my private messages, you know. At the moment, we have a weekly call every Tuesday at 5 p.m. I'm actually going to do this after this podcast where I'm like with my management team on the phone for like an hour making a plan. Okay, what's up this week? What's new? Which is way better than just forwarding me everything the minute it comes in because then you have like a constant stream of information.
What was your next single and how did you take that huge success and what did you do with that when you're thinking, oh, okay, we've got to put a new single out. Were you scared? Were you nervous? Like, how did you deal with that mentally? Like,
That one was easy because we already had Ain't Nobody prepared. It was already a SoundCloud hit and we just had to put it out. And I kind of knew it works because it worked on SoundCloud. Why shouldn't it work on Spotify too, you know? But then after Ain't Nobody, it was more the struggle. Okay, I don't actually kind of know what I'm doing. I was like, you know, I'm just a kid. I kind of did it accidentally, you know? It wasn't like, I'm not a world-class producer that knows all the formulas and just goes into the studio and makes hits. I was just kind of doing what I think was right, and it seemed to work. But then it started to become a little bit more like technical and more pressure from the industry, obviously, because, okay, we need like a release every 3 months now and all this stuff. And that's why I started to do writing sessions and production sessions now. That's why I then went to London to work with you. We made the beat for I Do, and we made Hot to Touch together in the end, a song that you already had. So, you know, that's how it kind of started.
Well, I obviously interviewed Tom Walker for episode 2, and I was his first writing session as well.
I met him in 2018, I think, in Geneva, and then later in Munich as well for the first time. That was long after the song was out. It was so cool to meet him as well.
I remember being out in the pub one night and getting a text from one of you. I can't remember. I think probably Tommy said, oh, look who I'm with. And it was you two together in like a random country. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? This is so weird. Like we just a little pause in the conversation. We ended up accidentally on the same gig as well 2 years ago, just before Hot to Touch came out. We're in Scotland or something, weren't we? In Edinburgh.
Good times, good times. Yeah, it was in Scotland, in St. Andrews, wasn't it? Like a uni party or something.
And that was just before Hot to Touch came out. And I remember saying goodbye to you and I'm saying to you, I'm really sorry if it doesn't work, if this song doesn't work. And you said to me, and it was really good, as you closed the door, you just said, we just made what we wanted to make. We made what we liked and we like, and that's it.
Dope. And it worked, man. It's like at 130 million streams or something like that.
140 something. Number one airplay record in Germany, platinum. So we did all right with that one. So speaking of shows, when was your first big festival gig? Because I know you're a big festival DJ. And what was that like standing up in front of thousands of people for the first time?
I'm not 100% sure if it actually was the first one. I think 2015 in summer, it started to be really big. And I played weekend festival in Helsinki and in Estonia. And I played on the main stage for like 30,000 people, like in between acts like David Guetta and Martin Garrix and stuff. And everybody was backstage. And I didn't even have a tour manager. I was just on my own with the booking agent, you know. I didn't even know that you need like a rider for CO2 or something like that, you know? It's like you don't actually say CO2 in English. What's it again? You do CO2 or there's another word. Is it cryo or something like that?
Carbon dioxide, I think is the technical name for it, but.
Like, I didn't even know, like, and the agents were like, okay, asking me stuff like, and the stage manager, okay, so what do you have planned? Do we have a confetti shot? And I'm like, I don't know, just do whatever. I'm a DJ, you know? I don't know. I'm just here to play records. And yeah, it was obviously mind-blowing and crazy, but I also had to learn a lot. It's kind of weird actually thinking about it today that I actually did like main stage shows without a team. It's insane. Like now we have a VJ, we have a light designer, we have a tour manager, we have a photographer with me, and you know, everything is like we have a rider with all the special effects, blah, blah, blah. So much planning and so much thoughts going into the show. But back then I was just DJing.
So you went from playing for 30,000 people without really knowing what was going on. And you then did your first proper tour, which was called?
The Bonfire Tour, was it?
So you named it after a Bonfire, which was another big hit for you, featuring Alma. Talk me through that. Like, what was that like compared to like playing festivals? I can imagine that's kind of a different vibe.
Yeah, it was dope. I really love the live tour vibes because you just have even more control about everything. Like I could design the stage myself, the booth, the lighting, everything. Like I was also like on tour with you and other musicians and singers. So Jasmine Thompson came, for example, to sing Ain't Nobody live. It was so much fun. I don't know, back then like I was younger and I was like insecure and stressed out, so I like, as you know, we had a lot of talks on the tour. I wasn't always fully enjoying being a like superstar DJ and being on tour. But if you look at it from a creative side, it's amazing because I could like fully do what I want to do and just like share my music with the fans that all like bought tickets to see me and to hear my songs. So
honestly, I had such fun being on the bus with you and stuff, and all the crew were amazing. And one thing about going on tour is, like, you know, you get such a sense of being in a kind of family. You know, you're a family for a few weeks, you know.
For sure. Yeah, you really have a strong community vibe. Like, everybody's together on the bus and like all day at catering, at soundcheck. Everybody's like putting in the time and effort for like one thing, just to put on a good show for everybody who's coming. So
big shouts out to your catering. I think I was the only person on that tour who was like vegetarian, and every single stop, every single city we played at, there was like vegan soups and shit. I was just like, man, this is crazy shit.
Yeah, I'm fully vegan now, like for 6 months. I've been vegetarian for almost 2 years now, and I now went vegan, and it's really cool. So if we go on tour again, there will be amazing vegan food, even better.
If someone puts real milk in any, like cow's milk in anything, it's disgusting. I'm like, oh, I cannot stand it anymore.
Which one is your favorite? Oat milk?
Oh yeah, I have to say it is. And it's better for the environment than almond milk, because, you know, it takes so much water to extract the milk out of one almond. It's crazy. We are now alternative milk experts. So you went on to release quite a few more singles after that. And then came time for your debut album. It was kind of an interesting time for you. Yeah, just talk us through that process and the promotion process and how you developed as a person through that.
Well, that's a big question. Where do I start? Yeah, kind of it was, I think at some point it was just time for an album. I took like 3-4 years after I started having hits to release a full-length album, actually. I was mainly focused on the sound then. Like, I released songs that I enjoyed, but they didn't really have a strong connection. It was just good songs. And the connection was really the sound. And I tried to, like, have my signature with combining, like, dance music with real instruments. There's always, like, a trumpet or marimba or guitar or something on all of the tracks. It was a little bit like a, like, compilation of what I had done, you know, which is maybe a nice way of looking at it. It's like, this is like, if you want to dive, if you like one of the songs and you want to dive into a world, you know, you can listen to the whole thing here. Whereas now, actually, I'm working on the second one at the moment. I just need to finish a couple of productions. All the songs are done. I co-write all the lyrics and the songs are all about me and are actually like all connected. So from the first to the 10th track, they're like telling a story and lyrically they're connected, and it's like more of a concept album, so a completely different approach.
You kind of came through from like being, you know, someone that I guess we kind of knew, but to someone actually that we really knew, you know, and you've been more comfortable about talking about yourself and your personal life. And especially, as you said, that's now being reflected, hopefully, in album two. Was there like a day you thought, actually, no, I want to sort of be a bit more personal in my songs and in my life? How did that happen?
I think it wasn't really a day. It was more of a long ongoing process, because I got successful at such a young age that I didn't really know who I was, you know. I was still a really insecure little confused kid, and suddenly I was touring the world. I was always put in front of the camera. I was on red carpets. I was playing for huge crowds, but I couldn't really enjoy a lot of it, because I was like, I had headaches every day, I had back pain every day, I had panic attacks, I was like stressed out all the time. It was crazy. So I kind of started to notice that something isn't really going right, and I just had to fix it. So the first thing that I had was like, I gotta be authentic. And that's kind of what the single Cool that came with the album featuring Marky Bessie and Gucci Mane was also about. It's like, just be yourself and be authentic, and that's really cool. And then I also, around that album, I also came out as bisexual and decided to share that with the public, just because, you know, I didn't want to keep any secrets any longer, because it was stressing me out if I'm in an interview situation and I can't, or I don't want to talk about something. It's really stressful to have it in the back of your hand and be careful not to say it out loud and stuff like that, you know. So I noticed all these things, like, especially with Hot to Touch, man. It was the worst for interviews. It's like, so who do you think is too hot to touch, bro? It's like, and then, like, after the album, I was like, okay, I need to take it to the next level. And I started writing for it in April 2018 in LA. Like, that was just 2 months after the first album. And I was like, okay, what should the second album be about? And I kind of wanted to, or just had the urge in me to make it even more personal and to tell my story. and to also to not just do feel good music, which I'm mostly known for, but also show the more serious and maybe darker sides of me, and just to share that with the world as well. I started to make a lot of progress in my like personal life and happiness and mindfulness and all of that, that I feel like, oh wow, I had to go through all these struggles to get here. Maybe I can like share my path, and by doing that, help others that are struggling too. The beginning of the podcast, we said how like my parents were pushing me to go to uni, and I had to prove I can make money with this. But all this was gone, you know, this wasn't driving me anymore. It wasn't like a motivation. So I was like, okay, what's my actual motivation for album two? And then this was kind of my purpose.
How is the Felix Zane sitting in front of me? How has he changed from, say, like 2-3 years ago? Like,
I think the main difference is that I'm now mindful and I'm seeing things for what they actually are. Every conversation that I have, everything I eat, everything I see just looks different, tastes different, feels different. I don't feel any bad emotions anymore. Like, there's no anger in me. I'm not ever mad at somebody. If somebody like shouts at me, I feel sorry for them. I'm like trying to figure out why they feel the need to shout at me, you know? I'm like, fuck, this person must be hurting. Why is he or she shouting, you know? And I'm just like in peace and in harmony, really.
Where do you think the next 10 years are going to take you? And having learned what you've learned and having grown personally, where do you see yourself in 10 years' time? And is it in music?
I don't really, I kind of just planned out the next year. Like, I want to, now that like I was in my house by the sea, now isolated for 8 weeks, I kind of feel the need to see humans again. And I want to go back to my place in Berlin and like be in the city. And then end of this year, I actually want to move to London for 2 months so we can hang and catch up. And then next year in spring, I want to move to LA for 2 months, just because to me, Berlin, London, LA, those are like the three main cities for music right now. And I just want to try them out and live there for a while and get inspired and see where it takes me. And then like next year, I'm going to do a big festival summer, hopefully, because I'm really missing it this year. And then after that, I literally have no idea what I want to do. I can really see myself taking some time off at some point, like literally like half a year or year, to just travel and just see the world, because I've been to like 50 countries, but I only spent like 6 hours in some of them, you know? So it's like, I really just want to like travel and live. And then I know that I really want to have a family. I want to be a dad. I want to have kids. And once I have kids, I also want to be there for them. So I won't be doing a lot of touring and stuff. Probably I might do a couple of shows because it's fun, but I want to like be at home and cook lunch and, I don't know, grow veg in the garden and stuff like that. I just want to live like a normal life, you know?
It's a really nice note on which to end it. And yeah, I mean, I wish you all the success going forward. And it was lovely speaking to you. And thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me. Thank you for being on High Club.
Oh, wow. Thank you for having me on High Club. It's been a pleasure.